Welcome to Foresight Friday Roundup, Foresight Health's podcast series for healthcare revolutionaries. Outcomes matter, customers count, and value rules. Hello again, everyone. This is Dave Burda, news editor at Foresight Health. It is Friday, April 1st. Yes, it's April Fool's Day. We'll get to that in a minute. And today's episode of the Roundup, we're going to talk about social determinants of health. You know, all those things like income and education and food security and housing and transportation that have a direct bearing on our health status. Specifically, we're going to talk about a recent survey by the American Society of Health System Pharmacists on social determinants and a new survey by the Physicians Foundation on social determinants. To tell us what the surveys add to the discussion about social determinants are Dave Johnson, founder and CEO of Foresight Health, and Julie Murchison, partner at Transformation Capital. Hi, Dave. Hi, Julie. How are you guys doing this morning? Dave?
The calendar has turned. March left Chicago like a lion with wintry mix. That's no fun. Baseball's opening day is next week, so I'm choosing to be an optimist and believe that spring is right around the corner, even though the realist in me knows there's at least one more snowstorm heading our way.
Good for you. Julie, how are you doing?
I am well. It was sunny in Seattle yesterday, and this EHIR group has a health plan innovation roundtable that Primera hosted yesterday, and it helped me see one of my old friends in healthcare for dinner. So I feel like, again, a new normal back in my life.
Yeah, we're back. That's great. Thank you. Now, before we talk about these two social determinants surveys, let's talk about April Fool's Day. Dave, what's the biggest prank you pulled or had pulled on you?
Well, I'll give you one of each. A New Jersey hospital CFO pulled the best gag on me in the early 90s. I had a brand new Saab 9000 that I absolutely loved. I must have been bragging about it because the CFO arranged for a hospital-wide intercom announcement that my gray Saab was on fire in the parking lot. Totally punked me. My best April Fool's prank was on my mother when I was about 12. I cut a hole in a cardboard jewelry box, stuck my finger through the hole, covered it with ketchup, and put the lid back on, and told my mom that I'd found the figure in the backyard. No reaction from her at all. I thought my trick was a total dud, so I started to pull my finger out. That's when she screamed and ran out of the room. So excellent.
Oh, man, you're a professional. That's great. Julie, what's the best April Fool's incident you've been involved in?
I also have two. One, I got my kids one year by making eggs out of yogurt, and I put a little cake in the middle, and it was like a totally different sweet treat than eggs for breakfast, which they loved, actually, but probably good old out of the hat. But the best one...
You're way too nice.
I know. That was that was when they were like four, you know. But the best one ever played on our family in general was my son, who was dating a twin, and those twins switched on him, and he had no idea for like half the day, and he was so embarrassed, and it just made us laugh so hard, and those twins are so funny. You know, twins can be evil, that's all I'll say.
That is excellent. Thank you. For me, it was the April Fool's Day edition of our college newspaper. I was the editor at the time. And let's just say you could print things in 1980 that you can't print 40 years later. And I think we're all better off for it. And I'll just leave it at that. So I still have a copy, and I'll show you in person. Then we could collectively burn it, and that'll be it. Okay, let's talk about the survey released by the American Society of Health System Pharmacists earlier this year. The ASHP asked more than 300 health system pharmacy executives what they foresee in the future for health system pharmacists. 51% said it was somewhat or very likely that pharmacists and pharmacy techs will regularly screen patients for social determinants of health by 2026, but only 38% said that pharmacists and pharmacy techs will be somewhat or very prepared to do those screenings. Dave, how do you see the role of pharmacists and pharmacy techs in screening for social determinants, and how can we close the gap between what's likely to happen and them not being prepared for it to happen?
The pharmacists and pharmacy tech members at ASHP clearly see what's coming, that screening for social determinants will become increasingly important. as the healthcare ecosystem tackles chronic disease and mental health conditions more proactively. But wishing it doesn't make it so. These ASHP members also worry they won't have adequate training to do the screenings, as you mentioned, Dave. And that's a very valid concern. To your first question about the role of pharmacists and pharmacy techs in screening for social determinants, it makes absolute sense. They interact regularly with patients, so there's the ability to develop a trusting relationship. And as Jan Berger has taught us, trust is essential to great healthcare. Secondly, they're highly trained and often underutilized professionals, so they certainly have the wherewithal and the bandwidth to do these screenings. And finally, they interact regularly with the hospital labs where much of the screening data originates. So they're well positioned to interpret and communicate vital medical data. Your second question about making this actually happen, though, is a tougher one. The pharmacy culture is subservient to the doctor culture, and medicine limits their activities generally to filling prescriptions and warning about potentially harmful drug interactions. Pharmacy's limited role within U.S. healthcare system is just a huge wasted opportunity. It's time to elevate their status and make them full members of patient care teams. Other countries like Mexico do this routinely. Patients there rely on local pharmacists for medical advice as well as prescriptions. So we need a managerial mindset change within health systems. Their executives need to go on the offense and really attack the root causes of chronic disease and mental health conditions so that care teams can more effectively manage these conditions before they require acute interventions. Pharmacies, as described above, could be remarkably effective in this effort. It isn't really rocket science. With all the staffing challenges and the desire of medical professionals to practice at top of license, it's a no-brainer to give more screening responsibility with adequate training to pharmacists and pharmacy techs. It should be easy to do, but it probably won't happen until payment models incentivize these types of interventions and/or the marketplace broadly creates competitive pressures to undertake more proactive screening for social determinants. To health system executives listening to this podcast, this is your Newt Rockne moment. It's time to play offense and score some points with both your customers and pharmacy professionals. Get out there and make it happen.
Got it, Dave. Thank you. Julie, any comments or questions for Dave?
Yeah, Dave, I found this really interesting, first of all, in terms of an association putting its people on the map in a way that makes them relevant. So there's that. But it really got me thinking about the role of the pharmacist and to what extent do you see this potentially spilling over into community pharmacists? And how effective do you think these pharmacists can be on what the SDOH issues really are?
Well, you can probably tell from my answer to the broad question, I think they could be potentially very effective. Health system pharmacies don't operate in isolation. My guess is that CVS, Walgreens, Walmart, and other community pharmacies will increase their level of screenings for social determinants as part of a broader consumer-centric drive to win customers by providing services consumers want in a convenient fashion. Health system pharmacies that fail to keep up will lose market relevance. So I do like your point that this association is getting on the map and scoring some points for its members. In terms of effectiveness, community pharmacists are exceptionally well positioned to conduct screenings. They're already in the community by definition, easy to access, usually right around the corner. So given appropriate training and tools and data, they can become remarkably effective brand ambassadors for their pharmacies. Screenings are essentially a retail activity, and retail pharmacies understand high volume, low margin business opportunities as well as anyone. So if the hospital pharmacies don't get with it, my guess is the community pharmacies will run circles around them.
Yeah, it's a void that needs to be filled. That's great. Thanks, Dave. Now let's talk about this survey released this week by the Physicians Foundation. The foundation surveyed about 1,500 doctors about their role in screening for social determinants. Here are some of the top line findings. 77% said many or all of their patients have at least one social determinant that affects their health outcomes, but 61% said they have little or no time to address their patient's social determinant needs. 89% cited limited time during patient visits as the biggest barrier, and 87% said they would like more time to do so. Julie, what's your read on what doctors are saying about social determinants, and what can we do to give them the time that they say they need?
Well, you know, NCQA is doing a lot of work on quality in this area. So I've been looking more closely at this lately. And physicians, health systems, health plans, they're already experiencing more burden in this area than potential benefit. And I would say mostly that's because of the data that's necessary to collect and the resources for coordination. Just collecting and using the data, the lack of standardization, there's no solid referral tracking mechanism. And actually, I shouldn't say there's no, there are, but they're not being widely used. And, you know, the availability of community resources is so variable across communities and not well aligned necessarily with what's going on in those communities. So there are just so many barriers to all the players, not just physicians. But physicians are already overworked and burning out. So they could use things like more well-aligned community resources, which probably requires more investment in local services. And by the way, innovative services that can do things at scale. They need better access to these resources. Today, these are relationships that happen at different levels of the organization, at social work levels and others. They need help with understanding how to best screen patients for social determinants. They could obviously use some financial incentives to prioritize this. There's no doubt about that. And they clearly, and we already know this, just need to reduce burden in other areas of practice, administrative burdens, automating efficiencies, things like that. And physicians are, I think, starting to form a voice around this and looking for policy solutions in reimbursement and, you know, payer incentives in particular. And, you know, they're starting to see some of this in Medicare Advantage and other programs. So pieces of it are coming together for physicians, but they're just way, way, way too overburdened. They need patient navigators and social workers to be part of the solution and not be so separate in all of this. So that gets back to a lot of the team-based care that we talk about here. I think that happens today. It doesn't happen in a way that's actually fully useful. It's full of friction, those processes. And, you know, I think part of what I see in all this is it's still ripe for innovation for these physicians. We've talked so much about innovation in terms of their workflow and what they do day-to-day in clinical care. But I see innovation on the social determinant side that could be super helpful. There are companies like Unite Us that we work with that are coordinating community resources specifically. They've enabled a system to close the loop on referrals. And so the physician and the healthcare teams can understand what happened out there in the community with that person and what's the progress there. They're starting to look at coordinating payment around this. So there can be a more fluid way to facilitate that. So there's not a payment concern, because that's obviously a big issue in a lot of social determinants, not all of them. Companies like Socially Determined that are helping health plans identify who's even at risk today. And, you know, social determinants is often thought of as an issue that happens in the Medicaid and underserved, but it's not. It's for all of us. And health plans have no idea who really have these issues and how to even help providers find the right patients to do more for. There's Aunt Bertha, there's even service models like PAPA that are, you know, putting community resources around people to really help people. So there's a lot of innovation in this area that's doing everything from the data to the community resources to the underlying technology systems. And it would be helpful to see some of these innovations move beyond the health plan into the provider setting and actually help physicians and care teams coordinate.
Got it, Julie. Thank you. It is an area ripe for innovation. Dave, any comments or questions for Julie?
Dave, I think you've done a classic Berta setup for us. So health system pharmacists think their jobs will require them to screen for social determinants, but they worry about a lack of training. Doctors know how to screen for social determinants, but they don't have adequate time to do so. And as Julie just mentioned, are so burdened. It feels like there's a pony in there somewhere. So Julie, how can health systems get the formula right so that between the pharmacists and pharmacy techs, the physicians and all the other social services that you mentioned, how can they get that formula right so that we're actually doing a much better proactive job of identifying individuals at risk and getting them the help before they have acute episodes?
Well, maybe we should just hit repeat on everything I just talked about with innovative solutions.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, health systems are going to end up in the position where they need to really proactively partner and help define what health system and providers need to really serve the needs of the community and work with the community on making sure that those resources exist, which means working with health plans, identifying innovative solutions, making sure that local community resources. You know, some of the biggest concerns I've actually heard from physicians working with NCQA on this, on the quality side, say that their biggest concern is that they don't have the community resources to even send people to. And I don't know if that's true or they don't know about them. So there's just a big coordination level that where health systems can help justify who does what.
What about pharmacists or pharmacy professionals in particular? Anything there that you see?
Health systems, I think, have the opportunity to think about the pharmacist as part of the care team in a way that they don't necessarily today, is my guess. And think about even local pharmacists increasingly in that way as well. And pharmacists have been thought of in this way for a long time, but not really actively utilized. So I think it's taking advantage of the resources that you actually have.
Yeah, thanks, Julie. We all get those short screenings by the nurse before the doctor comes into the exam room, you know. Do you feel safe at home? That sort of thing. I'd like to answer them the opposite way one time just to see what happens. And that will tell me if the doctor really reads this stuff. So that would make an interesting April Fool's joke. We'll see.
That so sounds like you, man.
Thanks, Dave. And thank you, Julie. Another great discussion. Now let's briefly talk about other big news that happened this week. Julie, what other news made you sit up and take notice?
So the one thing I saw this week that was really in our lane is the funding of a company called Brightline. And KKR is now coming into this company, which is frankly still a very, very early company, but focused on teen and adolescent mental and behavioral health issues. The valuation was off the charts in a world where public markets are falling apart. And if that's not a statement about the importance of these issues, I don't know what is.
Yeah, no, very interesting. Thanks, Julie. Dave, what other healthcare news caught your eye this week?
Well, CMS was out with its national health expenditure forecast earlier this week. You actually had a nice blog on this saying that there's nothing new in the forecast, everything from hospitals to physicians to Medicaid to Medicare to commercial to pharmacies. Increases in between 5% and 6% a year. You'd almost think there was no disruption going on at all. Harvard economist, my friend Michael Chernow, had an analysis in Health Affairs saying that the top line projections are, quote, relatively encouraging, quote, noting that the 2020s will be the first decade where spending doesn't increase as a percentage of GDP. Decade starts and ends at just under 20%. Of course, COVID did have something to do with that high number in 2020. For my two cents, I don't think these forecasts, while necessary, are a real service for the healthcare ecosystem. They assume next year and the year after and the year after that and the year after that will essentially be the same as last year. That's simply not going to be true. And saying so creates complacency among incumbents. The ground is shaking under their feet, but you wouldn't know it from the CMS expenditure forecasts. Unrestrained healthcare spending is just the way of the world, according to those numbers. And they need to figure out a way to have more variation or more urgency built into these forecasts. I'd fall asleep reading them.
Yeah, I'd like to meet one of the CMS actuaries sometime, see what they're like.
They'll be staring at your shoes, that's for sure.
All right. That is all the time we have for today. If you'd like to learn more about the topics we discussed on today's show, please visit our website at foresighthealth.com. You also can find a recording of this podcast and all our podcasts on the Healthcare Now Radio Network, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and other streaming services. Subscribe now and don't miss another segment of the best 20 minutes in healthcare. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Berta for Foresight Health.